Hello, and welcome back to another episode of You Can Survive, Let's Talk About Cancer. I'm your host, Arzu, a cancer survivor, as well as cancer champion for the patient-led charity, the Yorkshire Cancer Community. I'm also part of the Cancer Smart Initiative, which is an exciting opportunity to help tackle cancer and its associated inequalities in West Yorkshire and Harrogate. In particular, we're looking at how we can help improve outcomes of cancer patients through early diagnosis and screening and provision of preventative advice. Today we will be talking about lung cancer and the contribution of smoking to the development of this cancer and many other cancers. Lung cancer is one of the most common and serious types of cancers, with around 47,000 people being diagnosed with this in the UK every year. Lung cancer mainly affects older people, and it's found that 4 out of 10 people diagnosed with lung cancer will be aged 75 years or older. The most common cause of lung cancer is smoking, with 72% of cases being attributed to this. This is due to the inhalation of a number of different toxic substances in cigarette smoke. It is found that with lung cancer, a lot of the time the symptoms don't present until it has spread to the other parts of the body. The main symptoms that you may eventually develop if you do have lung cancer include a persistent cough, coughing up blood, persistent breathlessness, unexplained tiredness and weight loss, or an ache or pain when breathing or coughing. If you have any of these symptoms, we do recommend that you see your GP as soon as possible. According to Cancer Research UK, smoking is known to cause at least 15 different types of cancers, with the most common cancer being lung cancer and bowel cancer as well. The other types of cancers that smoking may contribute to include mouth cancer, esophageal cancer, liver cancer, pancreatic or ovarian cancer, bladder cancer, cervical cancer, and leukemia, to name a few. If you are a smoker or know someone who smokes and considering quitting, then we do recommend that you check the NHS website for more information on NHS Stop Smoking services to help you quit. We also have the NHS Quit Smoking app, which helps you to be able to monitor your progress during your quit attempt, see how much you're saving, and to receive that daily support you need to keep going. This app is free to download and is available on App Store and Google Play. This October, we are going to be sharing with you the story of a lung cancer patient called Rick, who successfully quit smoking, and we'll be sharing with you the benefits of doing so. After 20 minutes of quitting smoking, you will find that your pulse rate will start to recover and return to normal. And after 8 hours, your oxygen levels will also start to recover too, with the harmful carbon monoxide reducing by half in your bloodstream. After 72 hours, breathing is said to start to improve, becoming a lot more easier as your airways start to relax. And after 2 to 12 weeks, your blood circulation will also start to improve as well. In terms of the long-term benefits, it's thought that after 1 year of quitting, your risk of heart attack will be halved compared to someone who is a smoker, which is incredible. And after 10 years of quitting smoking, your risk of death from lung cancer will be halved compared to that of a smoker. These are the benefits that smoking cessation can bring to you, and we really hope that you seriously consider quitting and learning from Rick's story today. On today's episode, I'm joined by a fellow cancer champion, Rob. Welcome to the podcast, Rob.
Hi, Azu.
And we both have the pleasure to be interviewing an incredible person today who's seen a number of battles in his life. He is a lung cancer fighter, Rick. Welcome to the podcast, Rick.
Hi, Rob. Hi.
Thank you so much for joining us today. We're so excited to be speaking to you. Would you like to go on to share a bit more about yourself with our listeners?
My name's Rick Myers. I'm
69 years old. 69 years in October. I'm a retired welding engineer. And my first cancer diagnosis was in 2016. I went to my GP, which I didn't normally do. It'd probably been a few years since I've been to see them. Because I had a persistent cough, very different to the smoker's cough I had when I used to smoke, and what felt like a very bad chest infection. When I saw the GP, she said to me, it's probably a viral infection, and we don't give antibiotics out willy-nilly now. We prefer not to give them. So I'll give you some steroids and an inhaler, and try on your chest up and clear the infection that way. But I want you to go for a chest infection. A chest x-ray. And you can ring up and go this afternoon if you want. You know, it's a drop-in service at Harrogate. So I rang up and made the appointment, went, had the chest x-ray. And I got a phone call about 2 or 3 hours later from the GP to say, it's a very bad chest infection. We want you to take some antibiotics. So take the full course, which is 5 days, and then wait 2 weeks and go for another chest x-ray to make sure it's cleared it. I went for the second chest x-ray and received a letter from a GP to say they'd made me an appointment at the Sir Robert Ogden Macmillan Centre at Harrogate because they'd found something on my x-ray that they thought could be a cancer. I attended the appointments, and it's everything anyone can imagine. It's the most horrendous session you have with anyone. First time you're told that it's cancer. The support was very good because there was a Macmillan nurse sat in with the specialist who was talking to me. And from there, support just poured out of the place. You know, you felt reassured. The last thing they said to me on the interview then, whatever you do, when you leave here, don't go on the internet. Don't look it up. You scare yourself to death. And, of course, what do you do?
As we all did.
The big Google. It should be called a big Googly, actually.
Yeah.
I read the bit that says that, you know, lung cancer sufferers, 12 months, 18 months, couple of years, exceptional, 5 years, and thought, well, you know. Anyway, I was told a couple of weeks later that they'd had a case conference and they were going to carry out a lobectomy and remove part of my right lung because I'd got a growth the size of a cherry tomato in that area. And I went to Bexley Wing in St. James's Hospital in Leeds for an operation, which went straightforward, apart from the fact that I'm apparently, I knew I was allergic to codeine, but they became aware that I was allergic to morphine as well, or I had a reaction to morphine. So I spent 5 days in intensive care because I went into respiratory arrest. And it took them quite a long time to get me back around. Following that, I had a little recovery and then three courses of chemotherapy. Unfortunately, along with my rejection of codeine and morphine, I also don't like chemotherapy very much and developed sepsis as a result. So they stopped my chemotherapy and did a couple of scans and said everything was clear. And it remained like that for 18 months, nearly 2 years. Mm-hmm. And then in 2018, back in 2018, they found a couple of little marks on my left lung and decided that needed to be treated with chemotherapy again. In between times, in November of 2018, NICE approved immunotherapy in combination with chemotherapy for lung cancer treatment. And so I was offered the treatment in January 2019. Mm-hmm. Discussed it with the oncologist. And I said that I'd actually booked to go see my visit my son in and his family who live in Dubai in March, and didn't want to. Well, if possible, wanted to do that, and it was decided that it was a very slow growing, very small, about 9 millimeters across was the cancer that they'd spotted. And it was very slow growing, so there's no reason why it couldn't be held until I got back. So I started treatment in May 2019, combined chemotherapy and immunotherapy. I was the first patient in Harrogate to undergo that treatment, and I've been going having it, and actually again had trouble with the chemotherapy. Parallel with that, I developed a problem with gallstones, and the irritation of them passing into my bowel duct caused infections, and I've had several hospitalizations over the last 2 years with that problem. Purely due to my immune system being weakened. But I've now finished my immunotherapy. We decided I had a couple more to go, but we decided to halt the immunotherapy. I've had a scan to determine where my cancer's at now that we've stopped it, and my cancer has been static since well before the turn of the year. It's looking good. And in May, when I passed my 5 years, I started to think, well, there's something about this treatment. It seems to be working.
Yeah, definitely.
And I've had my ups and downs. Since April, I've been in hospital about 8 times, I think, with various little infections due to this immunity problem. But it's been worth it.
Definitely.
The immunity, we all went through chemotherapy, so that does affect your immunity system.
Yeah, definitely.
And it builds back up. Eventually, will the same happen for you?
Yeah, I presume it does. You know, they're fairly confident it will. I'm hoping it will. I've got various other complications. I'm a type 2 diabetic. I've got COPD.
Yeah.
And I've also, because of the amount of steroids I've had to take at various times, I've now developed Addison's disease, where your body doesn't produce cortisol. You know, I've got loads of things going wrong with me.
There's a smoker. I mean, you said a smoker. I mean, I was a smoker myself. It must have been on your mind when you went to the doctors with the chest infection. I mean, I know I went, and it was like, and you put that to the back of your mind and think, nah, it won't. But the other half, it's like them two things on your shoulders, isn't it? Good and bad. And one were going, yeah, this is it. That's years of smoking and
alcohol. I started smoking, with my contemporaries fairly late. I used to do a lot of cycling. I cycled as a schoolboy for Great Britain in the Tour of West Brabant in Holland, 2 years running. And then, so I was always, at that time, super fit. I used to train every day. I wouldn't go near anything to do with smoking, etc. And then when I got to about 17, 18, going out to youth clubs and pubs and girls and all working, the other things that come and working, and particularly in the industry I worked in, where you know you used to walk into welding shops and you couldn't see your hand in front of your face, so it made a lot of difference whether you smoked or not.
I mean, we both from a generation where people smoked inside, they smoked in the pub, smoking compartments on trains and all sorts. And it really, I worked in construction, I still do, and it was prevalent. I'm a site manager.
It's the norm. Yeah.
And that's that was how it was. I mean, the people that we idolized as sportsmen were smokers.
I used to go in a pub in Crossgate, it's called the Devon, and Billy Bremner, Jack Charlton, Norman Hunter, and they'd all stand there and they'd all be smoking. You know, all these football players would all be smoking prodigiously. And in that best room in the Devon pub, you couldn't see across it.
Exactly. It was part of life. I mean, as a site manager in construction, I learned more about the problems in the smoking area in the morning, going out, dishing the cigarettes, having a smoke with the lads and chatting away, than I could ever have done by walking around and checking. Because people, it was there. That was part of the industry. Everyone assumed that you did it. But even though we secretly knew that we shouldn't be doing it, and we still did it.
Mm-hmm. So. And I developed a really bad smoker's cough, and I decided to stop. You know, 3 years before I did, 2004, early part of 2014, I decided that I wanted to stop smoking.
Right, okay.
I went to a smoking cessation clinic in Crossgates in Leeds, and where you go every week and blow into a CO monitor and discuss all your problems and get some, I think it was Champex tablets. And it was successful. I stopped. But I think because I wanted to stop. You can't just say, I'm going to stop and it's going to happen. You've got to try. And of course, then all they ever say is, well, 5 years after you've stopped, it'll be like you never smoked. Until 2 years after you've stopped, you find out that you've got the consequences.
Same. You know, you stop and then it's like, there you go. So,
touching upon the smoker's cough that you had, when you were diagnosed with cancer, you know, you said that you had a persistent cough. That was something that you were experiencing. Were there any other symptoms that you experienced?
Well, it was shortness of breath. I knew I'd got a chest infection because I was struggling for breath. If I went up an incline, much of an incline walking, I had to really challenge my breathing. I could cough and not clear it. Mm-hmm. That was the difference. It was a rasping cough rather than anything productive.
Right. Okay.
And that's the rattly ones, isn't it?
That's what frightened me.
Yeah.
Or made me think. And the fact that I was struggling for breath, so I knew there was something not right.
And did it ever cross your mind that it could be lung cancer, considering that you were an ex-smoker?
Yeah. I was terrified when I went to the doctors. You've got an idea in the back of your mind that eventually it's gonna catch you. I was a heavy smoker. In my 20s, 30s, 40s, it could be 40 a day.
Wow.
It was a lot.
Yeah, when I was 20 a day. It depends if I went out on a Friday night.
Yeah.
Pub you could do. You could go in the pub at 7 o'clock and be looking for another 20 by half 9, 10 o'clock, wouldn't you?
If I didn't have cigarettes when I was going to bed, I'd actually get in the car and go and find an all-night garage so I got some to get up to. I couldn't face the prospect of getting up next morning and not having a cigarette. I was really, really addicted.
Yeah, I mean, you'd associate with things. I mean, for me, you'd go out, beer, cigarettes, people you socialise with did it as well.
Yeah, and even at work, I mean, I worked for the last 5 years for a company called Cameron Ironworks in Leeds, which made oilfield Christmas trees, for subsea Christmas trees, and oil gear, oilfield control equipment. There was about 1,000 people worked on the site. It was a massive site in Leeds. And we had two smoking shelters. And if there were any problems, most of the problems were sorted out in the smoking shelter, not in the meeting room.
Yeah. And I feel like from both of your experiences, it sounds like smoking was more of a social behaviour. Yes. Or a lot of people around you were doing it, so you kind of had that sense of peer pressure that sort of encouraged you to go ahead and smoke because it was something that everybody around you was doing.
Yeah. Well, when I was a teenager, everyone smoked. Yeah. There were very, very few people who didn't smoke.
Your parents, wouldn't it? Parents smoked.
My father smoked. My grandfather and grandmother both smoked. My mother never smoked. And my mother died of lung cancer.
Wow.
Yeah.
But maybe she passively smoked.
Yeah, my mother was brought up in Armley. And used to stand for a bus next to the asbestos factory, which was possibly the cause of her.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody really talked about the risks. Like, it was just a social behaviour that everybody was engaging in, and you thought it's normal, to be honest.
But the other thing was that people didn't live that long. I mean, the norm for someone, a man to draw his pension, the norm was something like 2 or 3 years.
Right.
Yeah, you know, exactly 65. Right. Most people didn't draw the pensions until for long after that.
Yeah.
The average age of working men was 69, 70.
And that was the average age. So the people who worked in industry, construction and engineering were down the bottom of that average.
Right.
And it was an association. I mean, I've told the story for you. I mean, for us, from my experience, PPE was in health and safety was almost an unnecessary expense.
Yes.
I mean, I can remember people turning up with hard hats and bits and pieces, going to get these on because we've heard the HSE are coming today, things like that. Yeah. We used to be cutting concrete. We were mostly in civils. You'd be cutting concrete and you'd just, your face up your nose and your mouth full of black dust and grey dust, and you put a hanky over your mouth. I'll tie it, you know, and there'd just be a great big spot in the middle where you'd breathed it in. And now they call it respiratory silicosis, because all that silicon dust sits in your chest and doesn't go anywhere, or sits in your throat and everything else. Yeah. And one of the things that they sort of said to me was, what industry do you work in? And it was, well, our construction, I mean, you know, project management now, but I started off as a labour science engineer. You know, working through the bomb, and it was there, and it was, and they would go, oh, well, maybe people used to go, well, maybe you could look at suing them. I was like, it was civils. If they're not dead themselves, they'll be in jail, you know. So there was never any issue with, but the responsibility was always, I think it was because of like two sides to it. You had your own responsibility to do something about it, and everyone ran scared of making, you know, suggestions that they wanted the right PPE, because most of the time there was loads of people available to take your job if you didn't want it. So you were sort of a little bit under the cosh, I suppose, to carry on what you were doing. But then we didn't really help it by all standing in the canteen. Yeah. Well, I was in the canteen, you smoked in the canteen, you know, smoked in the state office.
I can remember one thing I was involved in, it was a scrap metal dealer I used to deal with about thermic lancing and cutting metals and oxyacetylene cutting and plasma cutting. And he had a job to take a strong room out in one of the banks in Leeds when it was being converted into a wine bar or something. And he had a gang of men in there demolishing this strong room. And of course, it's multi-layer. There's steel, there's concrete, there's lead, there's all sorts. And they were trying to get holes through this and break it up and demolish it. And we were down in the basement, and I was showing these guys how to use a thermic lance to pierce through concrete and multi-layers and what have you. But the fume was horrendous because there was lead in this thing, and concrete and steel and reinforcing bar. And you couldn't see out in front of you. And I came out and I refused to continue.
And I think now that people are more aware of health and the implications of what
you've got,
we do.
You've got to have a certificate to say that you understand health and safety to go on a site now.
Definitely. And you know, like for the both of you with smoking, I know that you both quit. So, you know, starting with Rick, what was the main motivator for you? Because I know you mentioned you had that persistent cough, and that was 2 years before your cancer diagnosis. You decided, you know, you're going to give up smoking. But what was the main reason why you gave up, and what kept you going? Because, you know, with smoking, there are a lot of people who go into, you know, their quit attempt and then they relapse, and that's absolutely normal. But what kept you going to maintain that quit attempt now?
I tried at least 2 or 3 times before to stop and not succeeding. And then it was the advertising for the NHS quit line that really finally motivated me to do it. And I was determined then. And because someone's checking on you every week, it becomes a matter of pride not to offend. And I did. It's true. Once you turn the receptors off, they're off. The thing you've got to do is say, the next cigarette I have will turn them all back on again. Mm. And that's might be my mantra since then. I wouldn't have another. I would not have another cigarette now, ever. I can sit next to someone and them smoke, and it. Well, yeah, I get like quite lightheaded at times, but I would never ever take a cigarette again because it's too much of a risk.
Exactly.
After having failed two or three times to stop, when I did stop, I was so proud of it, and I really wanted to stop because my children were getting to the age where they were going to have grandchildren.
Yeah.
The marriage, and I've now got three grandchildren, and I want to see them grow up.
Definitely.
I wouldn't have, if I hadn't stopped smoking, I bet I wouldn't have been here now.
And I think you're such an amazing example of someone who went ahead, made that decision for themselves and just didn't give up. And it's not something that's going to be easy because it is an addictive behaviour. You know, you're dependent on the nicotine, you know, you're addicted to that component, but it's just not giving up and seeing the benefits, which was your overall health and the fact that you're alive today and you got through those difficult years of treatment. It's like, I think now nearly 6 years, I'd say, since your diagnosis originally. So, you know, I guess it's those healthy changes in your lifestyle that you made through quitting smoking that helped to recover your lungs.
Despite my COPD, I was doing quite well with my breathing. All my breathing exercises I managed to cope with. They give you a breathing thing that you blow into before you have your operation.
Right.
About 6 weeks before, and get you to do a lot of breathing exercises to expand your lungs before you actually have the operation. And you continue afterwards and then have physiotherapy to do with your breathing. And that was all very good. And it really helped. And I'm sure having had those 2 years stop smoking beforehand made a tremendous difference to my recovery.
Definitely.
And
how would you like describe your overall experience of accessing the smoking cessation services?
It was very good. I mean, I was lucky. There was one just down the road in Cross Gates in Leeds. It was on a Tuesday night from memory, and I used to go there. You'd sit there with a group of like-minded sufferers, full of trepidation about whether they're going to blow it clean or not. like having the extra pint before you drive, you know, everyone's sat there with their hands under their knees, sort of putting their legs up and down, worried
that they're getting told off. Sneaky one around the back before
they came in. Yeah. But, it's that support that's important. Getting to understand that it's not the nicotine turns on receptors in your brain. If you can turn those receptors off, the nicotine don't matter anymore.
Exactly.
Just about those. And as soon as this nicotine gets there, the receptors switch back on and say, we want more. It's a simple thing. And once you get your head around that, it's easier.
And they literally
say, it's not easy, but it is easier.
Absolutely. Like they say, within just 10 minutes of stopping smoking, so much of the, you know, positive changes arise, like your oxygen level starts to improve over a few days, you know, your lung condition starts to improve over time, and then your risk of heart attack or lung cancer will reduce over a set number of years. So it's like just realizing the benefit you're doing to yourself and treating it as a, I don't know, self-care activity that you're doing for yourself, not anybody else, just yourself. You know, in the long run, you'll thank yourself for doing that. And I think you kind of did do that.
Yeah, it's probably the first time since I was a teenager that I'd owned my own health.
Exactly. I just wanted to touch upon the fact that when we talk about smoking, a lot of the times we just mention lung cancer. But like if you do read up on the Cancer Research UK website, it actually is associated with 15 different cancers.
Yeah.
You know, so it's not just you reducing your risk of developing lung cancer if you, for example, quit smoking or don't even adopt that behavior at all. You're protecting yourself from, you know, so many other cancers, 14 other cancers apart from lung cancer. So it's definitely, you know, worth making that decision for yourself and for your health.
Yeah.
testament to that is my own. I mean, I didn't have lung cancer, but they're saying
yeah, it's exactly.
A contributory factor and mine was in the throat.
Yeah.
We set up a support group for lung cancer sufferers during 2019. And the majority of the people there had never smoked.
Wow.
And that's one of the problems with we discussed with lung cancer is that there was a lady there whose hers was genetic.
Right.
It come down through from parents. A form of lung cancer, which is treatable by medication, by tablets, but she still had to have a chest drain in. It still causes lots of problems. So that's the problem. It's seen as self-inflicted and it isn't always. Half of them are.
And I think it's really important to realise that, of course, many other factors can contribute to lung cancer. Yeah. And you should appreciate that anybody can be affected by it. But I really wanted to emphasise that smoking in particular is one of those major risk factors which contribute to, like, I guess, 72% of, you know, lung cancer cases. So this is like a behaviour which we can control ourselves. So our real, you know, key message for our listeners today is if you are a smoker or know someone who smokes, you know, educate them, make them aware of the risks and the impact it can have in your life. Because for Rick, obviously, when you were newly diagnosed and reading up on lung cancer and the prognosis, it's a scary thing, you know, it's a scary experience reading about those statistics, even though you may not be that statistic, it can frighten you. It can really, you know, eat away at the life that you want to live or have envisaged yourself. So to protect yourself from living that nightmare, you know, take that positive step now and protect your health.
The
other thing is responsibility as well, isn't it? It's take responsibility for others. Yeah. I mean, I always think about Roy Castle, who lung cancer, didn't smoke, worked in working men's clubs nearly all his life.
Yeah.
And as we've already discussed, you'd walk into those places in 60s, 70s, 80s, and there was just like this layer of smoke across the top. And it's also where you see people, even now, smoking the car with the kids in the back.
I was one of those. I did that all the time.
You've learned from that. You know, you've identified that. And I think the thing is to aim at people that don't seem to identify that. Where you've taken responsibility for that, where there are still people now where the message is a lot clearer, you know, than what it was when we were, when you and I were Isaac's age, we smoked because everybody smoked. Your famous people, your TV stars, your movie stars, you'd watch a film, you'd watch the telly. I mean, I watched The Sweeney and I watch it now and I think, Christ, look at that, every scene,
smoking.
And you think, well,
Dave Allen's. Dave Allen.
We always watch Dave Allen in his three-piece suit, telling great stories. And to me, I did read actually that it wasn't scotch, but he used to have a glass of scotch. But at some point later on, he changed it to ginger ale or something.
Yeah,
he did smoke, and that was what we were presented with. And it's now the message is a lot clearer, as I said, that as you know yourself, Rick, and the focus I think has to be on smokers to sort of go, I need to stop for myself, for my family. I mean, how much are there now? They're going to be over a tenner now, aren't
they? Yeah, there will be. Yeah, I mean, I think when I stopped, there were about £7 something.
You'll end up saving a lot of money if you could.
We could have had some fantastic family holidays if I had a small job.
Living in a mansion with a Range Rover in the drive.
Could have been the Bahamas every year, you know.
Yeah,
the cigarettes are 20p a pack.
Wow.
When I first started smoking would be when I was about 17 proper. I used to go out on a Wednesday night to the youth club. I used to borrow £1 off my mum because I didn't get paid till Thursday. Borrow £1 off my mum, and that paid for me youth club entry fee, a couple of pints at the pub afterwards, 20 cigarettes and fish and chips on the way home for £1.
If I remember rightly, the cigarette machine in the pub, 18, I think you got 17 in a pack and it were a quid.
Wow, that's terrible.
Or at £1.50, but I know it was, you had to pay 50p. It wasn't a lot, you know, like you say, £5. where you could go out and have a real good night on a fiver.
Mm. And I guess, like, based on what Rob, you've just mentioned, it's all about, you know, the risk of passive smoking as well. Yes. You know, you're directly damaging your own health, but you're also causing damage to your children or other people if you're smoking in public places around you because of passive smoking. You're endangering their health, and it's absolutely not a responsible behavior. So we really, you know, encourage you to think about the consequences for other people as well as yourself.
Yes.
And like, you know, Rick and Rob mentioned, you're going to save yourself a lot of money if you do quit smoking. So maybe you'll be able to afford a lot of the holidays that you wanted for your family as well.
And you won't get wet. You know, whenever you go to a restaurant, they're all stood outside, aren't they? Getting wet when it's raining. So, I mean, there is an important message. I mean, the thing is to stop. I mean, I can remember going to Jimmy's. I mean, I went every day for 7 weeks, 5 days a week, 7, 8 weeks, because it fell Easter time. And you'd walk through that door, and they just stood by the door. I mean, outside the Bexley Suite, smoking.
With a drip in their arm, leaning on the drip stand.
I've seen somebody in a wheelchair.
Yeah.
Outside the door, smoking with, and they were even having the chemo because they'd got black back over.
Wow, that's terrible.
Yeah, yeah.
And they were having a cigarette. Mm. And I was just like, I think the message you've got from, you know, it's what other message do you need that it's time to stop?
But that's one of the things that I found most rewarding was that I didn't need it anymore.
Mm.
I could walk past those people going to hospital and sit quite comfortably in the warm without getting wet, without him having to travel down endless corridors, sit out in the rain to smoke.
Yeah, I mean, I
that sense
like
of freedom.
Yeah.
I guess that sense of freedom that, you know, you defeated your addiction and came out of it the other end, feeling well, feeling healthy, and sitting comfortably inside as opposed to outside.
But it's like fighting cancer. It's the right mental approach. You've really got to want to do it.
Yeah.
You've really got to have an aim in front of you. And my aim was to see my grandkids grow up.
Oh,
that's a good aim.
You know, my next aim, hurdle, is to see the eldest grandson go to secondary school.
Oh,
brilliant. That's
really
aim for.
And well, then just, we really hope you reach that 10-year mark and then we can interview again.
Yeah, I'll come on. I'll come on.
And like, just finally, I want to really reiterate to our listeners that when we talk about smoking and cigarettes, it's not just limited to cigarettes alone. You know, there's various other sources such as like shisha or cigars and pan, for example. And we don't tend to sort of associate that to cigarettes. We just think that's a separate activity, but actually they all carry the same risk to your health. Yeah. So it's very important to educate ourselves and be aware of this and avoid engaging in these behaviors wherever possible, because we've already discussed a lot of the risks, and not just nicotine being addictive or tobacco. There's so many other chemicals in cigarettes that are so damaging to our lungs. You know, COPD, for example, is a lung condition that a lot of smokers go on to develop, or just the cough, that persistent cough. I mean, it's interfering with your day-to-day activities and quality of life. And I think, you know, it'd be really nice if Rick could maybe give a final message based on his experience of both COPD and cancer and how his lessons, you know, he wants to share with other people.
One thing that really, in the last 18 months, 2 years, it's been horrendous having a smoker's cough. Because what's the first sign of COVID?
Cough.
A rapid cough.
Mm.
You walk anywhere and start coughing.
Yeah.
And there's people there, if you've had a shotgun, they'd shoot you.
Yeah. I can sympathise.
So, it's a really not a pleasant experience, because you're going to shop or anywhere, particularly in hospital, you're walking down the corridor, you start coughing, everyone turns around and looks and runs the other way.
Yeah.
You are right. I mean, I've experienced that as well. I mean, one of the side effects I had was that I still have a cough because fluid still collects.
Yeah.
There was a time when it used to sort of, I used to brush it off. And recently, you sort of think when you see people step back.
Yeah.
You know, there was a time where I used to think, well, I'm getting to the front of the queue. But now it's like everyone gives you a wide berth. So I can sympathise with your thoughts.
Yeah. But the important thing is that you early diagnosis is the best.
Yes.
And if you've smoked, get it checked out. If you've got anything at all, get it checked out. Because the odds are it's not going to be in your favour. And stopping smoking isn't as hard as they say, providing you want to do it. You've got to want to do it. And what worries me as well now is vaping. There's so many people vaping. There's so many unknowns about it. You know, I mean, we went for how many years where smoking was acceptable? 100, probably.
Yeah.
And then then it was proved that it wasn't, and it was damaging to your health. Let's not do that with vaping. There's lots of things, lots of chemicals in these preparations that we don't know what they
are. Yeah, I've never tried it, but it doesn't look good to me.
No, and for the younger generation with the with the cannabis mixed in with it as well, that doesn't do any good.
No. And I think, like, just to add on, you know, with COVID, like you said, the cough, it tends to be misinterpreted as being just, like, you know, something related to a viral infection or maybe coronavirus, but it actually can be lung cancer. So if anyone has been experiencing a cough for more than 3 weeks and it's just persisting and not improving, then, you know, we all urge you to see a GP.
Watch the Do It For Yourself.
Yes.
Definitely.
Yeah. Not all coughs for COVID.
No.
And that's the problem is if you present to an A&E with a cough, you'll get COVID tested and you'll be put in a COVID ward for 2 days till your results come back.
Yeah. And then you'd say there's nothing wrong with you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That happened to me. When you're having treatment, you have an emergency line to ring if you have a temperature or feel unwell. I rang the emergency line and they said, well, you've got a temperature. You need to go into A&E. I went into an A&E and I was coughing as I went in and I had a temperature. I was a vulnerable patient. I had an emergency line because I was vulnerable. They COVID tested me, put me in a COVID ward for 3 days till my results came back. But that is the last place I should have been.
Yeah, definitely.
They've changed the system now and most hospitals have an admissions ward which has separate rooms, isolation rooms. Mm-hmm. And that happens at Harrogate now. I don't go into A&E, now I go to a ward, into an isolation room, have my test done, and then when it's free, I go into a normal ward.
And just a final message for our listeners to Derek, anything you'd like to say based on your experience and your cancer journey?
Don't be afraid of it. It's no longer a death sentence as it was.
Definitely.
It's the support that you get is absolutely second to none. I can't fault any of the support I've been given from Macmillan, from the staff at Rob Ogden, everyone involved there at Harrogate and at Bexley have been so kind, so supportive, and explained everything bit by bit as you've gone through it and helped you in any way they can. You have to have the right mental approach. Mm. You've got to be determined to beat it. If you give up, you lose. But you need to just take small steps.
Yeah.
Get something to aim for next month and then in 3 months' time and in 12 months' time. Small steps that you can easily measure.
Absolutely. And
just battle it that way.
Sounds good to me.
Excellent. And here you are 5 years later.
5 years
on. Sharing your story.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for joining us, Derek. It's been a pleasure speaking to you. I'm sure Rob agrees with me.
Absolutely. Wonderful, always, Rick.
Definitely. And we learned so much, and I'm sure all the listeners have felt inspired by your story and learned something.
So that brings us to the end of another episode of You Can Survive, Let's Talk About Cancer. We really hope you enjoyed our conversation with Rick today and feel inspired by his determination, his positivity and bravery in fighting his lung cancer. If you would like to learn more about lung cancer, smoking risks and smoking cessation services, then please do visit the links to the NHS website and Cancer Research UK website in the description below. Thank you. This podcast is brought to you by West Yorkshire and Harrogate Cancer Alliance and patient-led charity, the Yorkshire Cancer Community. To find out more, visit us on our website www.yorkshirecancercommunity.co.uk/cancersmart. Thank you.